Greetings, greetings, and welcome to the show. This is Wrong Place, Right Crime. I am your host, Frank Zaffiro, and we are in the middle of, and actually very near to the end of, a celebration of the series A Grifter Song. What is A Grifter Song? It is a novella anthology series published by Down and Out Books that features two grifters, Rachel and Sam, who are devoted to each other and to the con, and the rest of the world can go hang itself, pretty much. So each of the episodes, and there have been 35, is written by a different author, set in a different location, features a different con, and of course, because it's a different author, the style and the voice is different. The choice of point of view varies. And this is why the series has remained fresh throughout, you know, 5 seasons and 35 episodes. Of course, it also has the familiarity of the two lead characters and the strength of their relationship, creating a familiar sense of comfort for the reader. And that makes for a nice combination. But all good things must come to an end, as they say, and A Grifter Song is ending with episode 35, Into the Dying Sun, as the series finale. That will drop on October 1st, 2023. In the meantime, we are walking through all of the other episodes, 3 episodes per podcast episode, and talking to the authors who wrote them and getting their insight into the characters and their story and the process. And along the way, as the series editor and creator, I'm dropping any behind-the-scenes tidbits that come to mind. But mostly, I hope you're here for the authors because they have some interesting things to say. All of these books, indeed the entire series, is published by Down and Out Books. That's downandoutbooks.com if you want to learn more about them. Down and Out Books is all one word in that address. And they are sponsoring this podcast retrospective as well. So thanks to Down and Out Books for being the home of A Grifter Song. And so with that, let's turn to episode 30, Good For It by T.G. Wolfe. Now, this is an interesting episode because Sam and Rachel are in between cons and they end up taking a straight job and at a retirement community and then stumbling across some opportunities to run a con, only to find out that the tenants of this retirement community are former mobsters or criminals themselves, and they were good at it. And this is something that happens fairly early on, so I don't think it's too much of a spoiler. And so Sam and Rachel get drawn into what's going on with them. Now, the author is T.G. Wolfe, and she has written a couple of other things. Her De La Cruz books are action-packed and well worth your time. She also does a podcast that's kind of neat. Authors submit stories. She reads them on the podcast live, no editing, while her son Jack plays piano in the background. And they always stop before the end of the story, the big whodunit moment, and speculate. Jack takes a guess or two before they dive into the solution. Then the stories are later published in an anthology. Mysteries to Die For is the podcast. Definitely worth checking out. But turning back to Good For It, episode 30 of A Grifter Song here. You know, something about every episode stands out as special to me. You know, I mentioned in the previous episode how much I liked Paul Garth's language. In the case of Good For It, it really is the story itself that stands out to me. These aging tenants who have lost a step but haven't lost their minds, who are pulling all kinds of different jobs while they're there. Sam and Rachel get involved. There's a tie back to the mobsters that they're running from. But most of all, I think that I like the way the characters are drawn. One of the things I've noticed recently because of another book that I'm working on is how we look at elderly people. And I guess I shouldn't say elderly, because when I say elderly, I mean almost like infirm, but more seniors, I guess. We look at them oddly as a society. Like once you get past a certain age, you know, you're just a cute old man or a cute old lady, and these attributes are attributed to you that may or may not be accurate. I mean, if somebody was a jerk at 30 and a jerk at 55, why are they suddenly going to be, you know, pleasant at 75 or 80? But we don't look at it that way. We tend to infantilize these folks once they reach a certain age. It's like we strip their identity from them and give them a ready-made old person persona. And, you know, maybe because I'm 55 and I see that coming for me soon, is why I notice it. But it's what I like about this episode. I like how Tina really explores these, folks in as individuals, and they're very active and they're good at what they do. So that's my take on a good for it. More importantly, let's hear what T.G. Wolf, has to say, about her experience writing Good For It. Episode 30 of A Grifter Song. Well, I will just start by asking you a question that has been the first I've asked just about everyone, and that is, what made you accept the invitation to be part of A Grifter Song?
Well, honestly, Frank, it was you. You know, I've really enjoyed reading your work. I've enjoyed your stories. And so, honestly, I was very honored when you invited me to join into A Grifter Song, and I, at that point, I hadn't read any of them, so it was you.
Well, you didn't let me down, that's for sure. and you came up with a story, if I remember correctly, that was specifically for this series. It wasn't, you know, kind of hiding in the attic and coming out when it found a particular vehicle to latch onto. What inspired this story?
You're right that I wrote it just for you. Of course, since it's centered around your characters, I didn't have anything. And generally, I don't do that. When I get into a project, I create originally for that project rather than trying to shave down a square peg to fit in that round hole. When I write stories like this, I try to set them in a place where I have been. So I picked Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin, which is one of the favorite vacation spots of my two now teenage boys. And then I had to think long and hard about how to put Sam and Rachel in a situation that would entertain the reader. And so, you know, I put them in that uncomfortable situation of being in a retirement home of bored rich people. And then on top of that, I had to figure out the grift. And I have to say that that was the hardest part for me, because I don't normally write those. I write whodunit mysteries or other versions of mysteries. So I was very happy with the way things came together. But for me, they were four different elements that I had to pick. And as you know, those things, as much as you're an author, you don't actually get a whole lot of choice. The characters sort of drive where they want to be. And that's where they ended up, in a snowstorm in February or January in Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin.
Well, and you touched on this a little bit, you know, writing in this series does come with a rule book, and some writers have found that to be helpful and liberating. Others have found it to be restrictive and make more work for them. How was your experience with that?
I enjoyed it. I always do like a challenge, and I had never had that challenge before. I think the thing for me was I didn't have any problem with the rule book. But if you remember, I wanted to know more about their personality so I could write them true to the people that you knew them to be. And if you remember, I called and said, hey, can we have a conversation and pretend that we're going to go out to dinner with Sam and Rachel, and you're introducing me to them. And I had the feeling that nobody had ever asked you to do that before, because you kind of went back to, well, it's all in the rule book. I'm like, that's not the kind of stuff I wanted. You know, I do end up with a lot of humor, not slapstick humor, but a lot of humor in mine. And I had to know how these characters would react to that. And so you told me things like, you know, Rachel is very intuitive and Sam has complete trust in her intuition. And so I used that. And you told me Sam never loses his cool. And I brought him damn close to losing his cool. And then Rachel reacted to that. So I really appreciated the guidelines. It was a fun challenge. But I wanted more. I wanted to know more about the people themselves.
Well, as you found out more about Rachel and more about Sam, was there something about them that you really liked or that intrigued you?
Well, the one bit of research that I did was I read every episode that you wrote. And so I wanted to see how you, again, you know, use them. And you made it very clear in the guidelines, too, that they're commitment to each other, their love for each other was not perfect. That's not the right word that you used, but it's wholesome and it's unspoiled and you couldn't spoil it.
It's inviolable.
Inviolable. And so that was an excellent place for me to set the ground rules. So then as these other characters, worked their own magic on Sam and Rachel, they always had that place that grounded them, and that was in each other. I've written romance. One of my series of mysteries was sold to a romance publisher. So instead of mystery with romantic elements, it came romantic suspense. And so that was a comfortable place for me to play, where the grifter itself was kind of uncomfortable. That romantic element was comfortable.
Was there a favorite part of this story for you?
The one scene that I had written, which takes place in the retirement home after Sam gets back from a casino with one of the residents, where that resident had tried to pull a con, well, did kind of pull a con and, faked falling down in front of somebody who turned out to be a dirty cop, and how that unraveled and how angry Sam was and how much Rachel had to do damage control before he blew their cover. It just worked really well. And you know, the character's like, what? You handled it like a pro. Like, that's not right. at that point, Sam is, once he and Rachel are alone, he's like, we're losing control of this. And she's like, that's okay. You know, they have a mind of their own. We only let them think they have control. So that whole scene came out much, much better than the simple version that I started with.
Well, be careful to avoid spoilers here, but that scene has an additional layer when you get deeper in the story, layers upon layers there. You bring an interesting point up, though, because it's grifting is this odd combination of improv and very meticulously planned events, you know, and so they kind of have to have a really good plan and then be very willing to just improv their way through it. That's one of the things that I like about the genre at times.
I had written some earlier stories and Chris Radigan edited for me. And it seemed like in my, we'll call it younger years, I was so focused on the protagonist that I often would forget that the antagonist reacts. And that in turn to what you just said. And so I think in more recent years, I've had a heightened awareness since essentially I blew it and had to rewrite the last 5 chapters of a book because I failed to have an antagonist react in character. And so very much that was on my mind is, if A, then what does B do? And if B does that, then what does C do? Because no longer, like you said, is it a nice step one, step two.
Yeah, that's a great observation. And Chris Radigan, excellent editor, so it does not surprise me that he brought that point up. You mentioned that you read the episodes of the series that I had written before writing your own. Have you read any of the others since? And if so, do any stand out as personal favorites?
You know, I have not. It's been on my to-do list. I'd love to read all of them. My to-be-read list is just very deep right now.
Yeah, I think that's pretty common among writers, especially after every mystery conference when they stuff your bag full of great books. Well, you did spend some time with Sam and Rachel, and you are writing as part of the final season, and that means it's coming to an end. If it was your story to end, how would you go about ending it? And I guess as a second question there, how do you think it will actually end?
You know, this is one of those head over heart or heart over head ones, because I've become so attached to Sam and Rachel that I want them to have a happily ever after, stealing from the romance genre. And these are two characters who've lived very challenging, dynamic, adrenaline-laced lives, or anything that I would view for them as a happily ever after, they would probably be bored out of their mind. So I could see a happily ever after for them being, you know, settling down in some coastal town, and, still setting up a con, but now letting the marks come to them in a quasi-legal way rather than them traveling about. And I'm sure, you know, as people discover who and where they are, that they'd have to, fend off attacks. as to how you will end it, you, my friend, tend to be much harsher on things than I am. So I am just hoping they survive the last episode.
So happy ending is thrive. Feared ending is just please survive. Well, A Good Fort is not the first thing you've written. Obviously, you've talked about some of the work that Chris Radigan has edited. What is your most recent release or upcoming release? And where can people find out more about T.G. Wolfe?
In July, I released the third in my Diamond Mystery series called Psychotherapy. So that series is now complete. There is a box ebook set with all three available from Down and Out. Really fun series, super fast paced. Yes, it's based on a mystery, but it has a lot of thriller elements to it. And then my next book coming out will be in February, also from Down and Out. And that will be the fourth book in my De La Cruz series. And the working title for that one is Playing Dead.
Oh, good title. Good title. And tgwolf.com.
tgwolf.com.
All right. Well, Atina, I want to tell you, I really enjoyed your episode and working with you on it. And I want to say thanks for that and certainly for coming on this retrospective podcast.
Well, thanks again for inviting me into this project. It really has been fun. And love being on the podcast with you.
All right. Thank you, Tina. That is T.G. Wolfe talking about Good For It. And one thing I didn't mention earlier is that she left a couple of things up in the air for me to deal with or any of the follow-on authors. But I chose to pick up that gauntlet and touch on it in the final episode. So I do appreciate those sorts of moves that really blend the episodes together in terms of the story fabric. That happens again in episode 31, Outfoxed, written by Jeffrey Hess. And I will let him tell you most of that. This is a situation where he's writing about an area he knows well in Florida, Tampa specifically. And Sam and Rachel are working on a real estate deal. You know, between art and real estate, they definitely have a niche, it seems like, based on what the authors have chosen to explore. This is a different kind of real estate deal than we've seen before. But the neat thing about this in particular that I liked was really two things. Of course, it goes without saying, once again, the style of the author and his writing. Jeffrey has almost a John D. MacDonald approach to writing about Florida. And then the setting itself is great. And the setting itself is clear. You feel like you're in Tampa when you're reading this. But the things that really stood out to me were the fact that Sam and Rachel's con is not as successful as it sometimes is. In other words, their mark starts to suspect. And that happens a few times throughout the series, but not frequently, not early on in the story either. And then the other piece that I like is just he tied in the Philadelphia angle. You know, this specter of being caught by little Vincent or his minions has been hanging over this couple throughout the entire series. Sometimes it's in the forefront. It's always in the background. And he found a way to tie it in really nicely. And especially since we're coming near the end of the series. And so that's an arc that has to be resolved in some fashion. His work really, really helped with that. So let's hear what Jeffrey Hess has to say about Outfoxed, his entry into A Grifter Song, book number 31. So, Jeff, remind me, how was it that you were invited to the series? And more importantly, what made you say yes?
Well, you know, it's funny. The invitation actually came from you kind of out of the blue, and I was thrilled to get it because I had first heard about this, the concept of the series years ago from Eric Campbell himself, who had mentioned it, and it struck me as odd. I mean, it was a foreign concept to me at the time to have a series written by multiple authors. But then the more I thought about it, the more I thought how appealing that was. And I really liked the concept. And I got really, really hooked on it. I became a fan pretty much instantly. It was entertaining. And then I was kind of blown away to get the invite to participate in it. And I was thrilled to be able to do so.
Well, your episode is number 31, Outfoxed. Something I did not include in the summary for the audience before I started talking with you here was a little inside fact that was actually not the original title, was it?
That was not. Yeah, I was originally thinking that it was going to be called Brahmin Manor Breakdown, because the real estate swindle that takes place is a land grab kind of a thing, and it is being pitched as being developed to be a huge high-end subdivision, and the development was going to be called a Brahmin Manor. Mm-hmm. And it was just a little wordy. So we ended up coming up with Plan B.
Yeah, I never hated it. I always thought it had a nice little bit of alliteration to it and a little bit of an air of mystery. Outfoxed is punchier, certainly, and straight to the point. Was this a story that you developed once you came on board, or were elements of it already in place and you thought, hey, this would actually work in this new project?
Well, I started from a complete blank slate. Just knowing Sam and Rachel from their past episodes that I had read, I knew they had to do something, some sort of con, and I wanted to figure out a way to incorporate Florida and kind of my area of Florida. And I started thinking about who could be their mark and how it could play out. And one thing just like in most of my writing, one thing just leads to another.
You know, you were already familiar with the series before you were even asked to come aboard. But when you did come aboard, you know, I sent you the Bible. It had a bunch of rules in it. How are you with that? Did you welcome the rule set? Did you struggle with it? How did it play out for you?
Well, you know, again, it's kind of, again, I'm probably not the first to say this, but it's like a blessing and a curse, right? There's advantages and disadvantages, and it's something I've never done before. And so it was foreign to me, but it was a challenge. And it was also a bit of a gift, right, to have established characters. So that part of the equation was already ready-made for me. And again, having read a number of the episodes, I had a feel for them. I kind of knew them and what they were about. And one of the things that that I really wanted to pursue was their relationship and their dynamic together. And that was something that that was fun to do and play with. Incorporating the backstory and some of their, especially the Philly connection, was a lot of fun for me, because again, having the Philadelphia Philly spring train nearby, mm-hmm. that was a natural to kind of squeeze them into that environment and what happens there. I won't give any spoilers, but so yeah, it was, I don't know if that answers the question, but the series Bible was helpful despite the constraints.
Well, you mentioned your familiarity with the other episodes or some other episodes. How many did you read, and were any of them ones that stood out as a favorite?
I count off the top of my head, probably 8 episodes. I had read probably 5 before the invitation to participate. And again, I didn't want to try to read them all and then, you know, try to squeeze everything to under the gun. So I wanted to still be me and still let them be them in my version of them. And so I didn't want to overdo it. But yeah, some of the ones that really stand out is Sean Cosby's, Jonathan Brown's, Eric Pruitt. But if I'm forced to pick a favorite, I'm going with the original, the number one in the series, because that's where it all started. And that's kind of, who doesn't love an origin story?
Well, you're kind to say so. But did you have a favorite moment in this story?
You know, that's a tough question to answer, because there's a lot. As far as a particular favorite moment, you know, again, being an old married guy myself, you know, in a long-term relationship, I understand the concept of long-term relationships. And like Sam and Rachel, they have still a close connection and that bond. And so my favorite moment is a small moment between them where Sam's coming back to the hotel room and Rachel's inside, and they have kind of a secret knock, and just that nonverbal communication that couples have was fun for me to create and then have them express.
Yeah, I think I read in a Stephen King book one time that every marriage has its own secret language. So you are obviously invested in the characters. You spent time reading some of the episodes, obviously all the time you spent writing. You have a vested interest in what happens to these characters. If you were the one deciding their fate, what would their fate look like?
Well, you know, I'm going to take the easy way out and plead the fifth on that. there's no, you know, it's kind of like I've been around long enough to know that you don't guess women's weight or ages for a reason. And this falls into that sort of situation. And I don't want to, again, I have my preferences and my theories, but yeah, I'm definitely pleading the fifth.
All right. That's what I'm asking about, your preferences and your theories. Actually, that's exactly what I'm asking. But I respect your constitutional rights.
if I was forced to answer, my preference would be 35 more episodes.
Well, there's certainly a cinematic quality to these stories, and yours is no different.
But yeah, I'd definitely love to see this adapted somehow and streamed, because it is such an awesome opportunity for some quality film work there.
I completely agree with you. Well, Jeff, what are you working on now, or what's your most recent release, or what do you have coming out, and where can people find out more about you?
Well, actually, Outfoxed is my most recent project, but just prior to that was a novel titled Scar Tissue, about a self-cutting workaholic who abandons everything she owns for a stripper with a death wish. So it's a little bit different than Outfoxed, but fun nonetheless, and also set in Florida, like a lot of my novels are. Coming up next is a story collection, and mine's going to be out in probably May next year, March or May next year. I forget what the timeline set up, again, by Down and Out Books, and it'll be called Pascagoula Run and Other Stories. It's just a whole different experience than a novel to see a whole bunch of separate pieces put together in such a way and shaped in a book form.
And that's coming out in the spring of 24. Where can people check out more of your work?
My website is jeffreyhess.com, and that's J-E-F-F-E-R-Y, hess.com. Social media, Jeffrey Hess Writer, on Twitter or X, whatever it's called now, Real Jeffrey Hess. So pretty much anything you put into the search bar with J-E-F-F-E-R-Y and H-E-S-S will probably come up with me.
All right. Well, I appreciate you writing such a great story and for taking part in this podcast retrospective. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me here, and again for inviting me to participate in this series. It was a thrill and an honor, and I look forward to seeing the final episode. Much success and luck with it.
All right. Thank you, Jeffrey. Now you have his thoughts on Outfoxed, a great entry into the series, really helps move forward the series arc of the Philadelphia Connection in the middle of a great con that's fun to read. And like I said, you definitely, if you don't feel like you're in Tampa, if you don't feel the humidity while you're reading this, then you're not really paying attention. Of course, there is an earlier episode of Wrong Place, Right Crime featuring Jeffrey Hess, and you can hear him talk about his other work in greater detail. So type his name into the search bar and give him a listen. Definitely check out his work. But we are going to move on to episode 32, Somewhere Outside Salvation by James D.F. Hanna. This one is set in a small West Virginia town. Now, we have been in that region before, and when I say region, I guess I mean that in a larger sense of the word. Never been in West Virginia proper. And this is a story that I really, really liked, because it brought elements in that those that had occurred before were handled differently, and some things were just flat out different. So, you know, it takes place at a carnival. You know, Rachel poses as a psychic, and that's not new. I mean, she was a medium in Gone Dead on You by Eric Pruitt, in Ghost Image. I mean, this is something she's done before. But the setting of the carnival and these characters who exist within this carnival that she interacts with are just splendid characters. They're just, it's a very Gothic, Southern Gothic, I think is what James calls it. And it definitely fits that description. Now, the owner of this carnival, and it's kind of a sideshow carnival, I mean, type of, you know, a bearded lady, mermaid sort of, you know, strongman, this kind of a carnival, not so much a fair like you would think of. The owner, he fancies himself a cryptid hunter. Now, I had not heard that term before, but when it was described to me, I knew exactly what it was. I'd heard of the kind of person before. This is someone who wants to find Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster, or, you know, any other sort of legendary creature like this. And so obviously there's at least a agnostic belief that they could exist. Otherwise, why would you search for them? And lucky for Sam and Rachel, he's willing to pay if somebody can find proof of these creatures. So that's their angle. They get involved in this carnival, and it is one hell of a ride. Now, James D.F. Hanna, like the 29 other authors in this series, has his own style, very different than the others. And it is a fun read. It is a fast read. And the sense of place is just outstanding. I do think my favorite part, my favorite element of it, was the crazy characters within the carnival setting. Now, there's a lot to like about this episode, and I could easily pick two or three other elements. But if I'm being honest, I think that's my favorite part of it. So anyway, let's hear what James D.F. Hanna has to say about his own episode. That's probably more important than what I think of it. So here are his thoughts on Somewhere Outside Salvation, A Grifter Song, book number 32. All right, James, well, I'll ask you the same question I've been asking everybody else right out of the chute. When you were invited to join A Grifter Song, what made you say yes?
So I've been a big fan of the series from the get-go. I was really excited because, you know, we met at Left Coast, and talking to you, and I said, you know, real big fan of the series, would love a chance to, you know, if you had a spot open up and you were like, okay, if you want to write one, go for it. And then I realized, well, crap, now I have to, you know. And so I actually have to back this junk up now. And it was just, you know, the series is so stacked with incredible writers. I mean, with yourself, with Sean Cosby, with Holly West, Matt Phillips, Eric Pruitt, to have a story in there and contributing to this mythology, I couldn't turn up that. I could not pass up that opportunity.
Well, you came up with a pretty unique story. I mean, everybody came up with their own story. Yours was one of the more off the beaten path ones. Was this something you came up 100% for the anthology, or was it playing around in your head before and this just was a good landing point for it?
So it was really interesting because I wanted to do something that was more Southern Gothic themed. I wanted to play with some ideas. And then, and this is the truth, and I think I'm just telling you this for the first time, I didn't know exactly the story until I knew I needed to give you an outline that day. And so I'm sitting at my computer at 6 a.m. in the morning going, okay, I don't know what this thing is, but we're just going to start writing this outline and see if we can make it work. And so I typed out what was probably, I don't know, like it was about a 750 word outline. Yeah. And that was how it formed. Was like, it was just one thing kind of fell, you know, into place right after another, and had nothing though, really only the most basic idea. So yeah.
Well, that's hilarious. I would not have known that. So good job faking it till you make it. But you were writing a story here that had some guidelines. It had some foul lines that you had to stay within. How was that, working with a rule book, so to speak?
So this was actually really nice because I liked having the established rules, honestly. Since I can kind of do whatever I want with my own stuff, but the mythology was very clear, and you know, and you, as an editor, as the creator for the series, you know, definitely you knew what, you know what the vision is of this. But then you also were make the story your own. And so with that, knowing, okay, you can go this way. Here's the lines you have to stay within. But otherwise, you can drive it as far as you want to. And that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
So Sam and Rachel are the main characters of this, obviously. Was there anything about them that you found intriguing or that you really liked or that bothered you? Anything specific about them that really stood out to you?
So for anyone, and I also have realized every answer I have started with so. So I'm going to apologize for that.
So go ahead.
With my own work, my series, you know, the main character, Henry Malone, is kind of an asshole. He's kind of a jerk a lot of the time. And what was great about Sam and Henry's not a mentally healthy character a lot of the time. What I really loved about getting to write about Sam and Rachel were, yes, they're on the run. Yes, they're criminals. But they are people who love each other. You know, and they within themselves have a healthy relationship, and their love and devotion for each other really fueled getting to work on this. It was really great to have that. You know, here are two sane people, but we're going to put them in as wild of a situation as we can. We being me, and just getting to roll with that was great.
And you did put them in some wild situations with some real unique characters. I think people are really going to enjoy it. Was there a favorite moment for you in your own story, either as you were writing it or when you were finished?
So there's a scene with Rachel and the German magician where he's doing a card trick. And that came probably when I was working on the second or third draft, that I needed that moment with Rachel where the magician understands that Rachel is working a con and never says anything to her because his whole life is dedicated to deception. And the interplay between the two of them as he's working this card trick, and he's a broken old man, he's a heroin addict, but he appreciates, you know what, I con people this way, you do it your way. And that's probably my favorite scene in the whole book.
Yeah, that's a cool moment. So you mentioned some of the other writers that you liked. Have you read any of the other episodes? And if you have, any personal favorites jump out at you?
I read as many of the other episodes as I could before I started. And actually, there were details in both Holly West's story and in S.A. Cosby's story, the computer expert from Holly's story, and then the detail about Rachel working at Carnival. Both of those I pulled to use in it. I really loved Paul Garth's. I mean, I think Paul is just, and I've said this to him and other people, I think line by line, he's just about as good of a writer working today. And his language is beautiful. His imagery is amazing. He wrote this dark metal album of a story. And I think it's an incredible piece.
Yeah, and his sense of place and his ability to create a foreboding sort of atmosphere is pretty incredible. So if I handed the reins over to you and said, you know what, you take over, how would you decide to end this? How do you think it should end?
So I'm all in for violence. I'm really a big fan. And I always say that my two predominant themes that I tend to work with are the lies we tell ourselves in the effort to become the person we think we are, and murder via sporting goods. Like if a baseball bat shows up in one of my stories, someone's getting hit with a baseball bat. So,
Chekhov's baseball bat.
Exactly, it's Chekhov's baseball bat. No, I want Sam and Rachel to get away though. I want them to be happy. I want them to be able to get away from, you know, from the eyes of Philly and go on and have a good life together. But I also think, personally, I would say let him keep on, you know, keep on running and conning. because that is so intrinsic to who they are.
Well, you have the Henry Malone series, and you've been in a number of anthologies. What's your most recent release, and how can people find out more about you?
So I have a new Henry Malone book out now called Because the Night. It is the sixth in the series. It's a follow-up to Behind the Wall of Sleep, which won the Seamus back in 2020. And I have a new story coming out in Voltron magazine called Murder Ballad, which is a Western. It's a noir Western. And really thrilled about that. Voltron's a great magazine. And I am obnoxious on whatever Elon is calling that site now, X, Twitter, whatever he wants to call it. You can find me on all of the social medias, Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, Instagram, at James D. F. Hanna, or you can find me on my website, jamesdfhanna.com.
Well, I wanted to say thanks for writing one of the more unique episodes of A Grifter Song, and thanks for being part of this podcast retrospective as well.
Thanks for having me on board, Frank. It was and remains an extreme honor to have gotten to have done it.
You're very kind.
All right, there you go. James D.F. Hanna's thoughts on Somewhere Outside Salvation, straight from the floor of the VoucherCon Mystery Conference. I thought it was funny how he pointed out that he started every sentence with "so" and then continued to do so. So that was kind of funny. I there's nothing more to say about this episode other than it was chosen by several of the other authors as one of their favorites. And I can see why. It's one of mine as well, just because it's such a fresh take. And that's what I've liked about this series so much, is just how each author has picked a spot that they can describe in a way that puts you there, chosen a con that is different than any other, even if it is in the same realm, it's handled so differently. And then the biggest piece is just the voice of each author. And honestly, when I go back to edit this, I'll probably find that every episode I said probably three times how that episode was one of my favorites, because honestly, I've got 35 favorites. It's just, it's crazy how good the authors in this series are and what a wonderful job that they've done. And I do hope that if you're listening to this, you check out James D.F. Hanna's Henry Malone series and his other work. Nothing would make me happier than someone reading an episode of A Grifter Song and branching out to read more work by the authors who contributed to it. All right, I do want to say a quick thank you to T.G. Wolf, Jeffrey Hess, and James D.F. Hanna for talking about their episodes of A Grifter Song. Episode 30, Good For It by T.G. Wolf. 31, Outfoxed by Jeffrey Hess. And number 32, Somewhere Outside Salvation by James D.F. Hanna. I also want to say thanks to you, the listener, especially if you have listened to these 11 episodes celebrating the series A Grifter Song. There's one more to go. In the next episode, the final episode of this retrospective, we are going to talk about episodes 33, 34, and 35. 33 is Setting the Record Straight by Patrick H. Moore. 34 is Stealing Paradise by Curtis Ippolito. And number 35, Into the Dying Sun, is the series finale. If you're listening to these as they drop, that'll be tomorrow. Either way, we'll talk to you soon. Until then, this is Frank Zaffiro, reminding you that sometimes you gotta be in the wrong place to write crime.